This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about meditation with Marcus Farry. He's a good friend of mine and someone I met through modelling, but has since gone on to change careers a few times and now specialises in teaching meditation to individuals, also in workplaces. He's a really lovely guy, and I think even just listening to this interview, you'll get why he's such a natural to this type of work. He's certainly someone I find very reassuring, even just to be around. So it's interesting to hear in more depth than at times friends tell each other some of the things he's been through.
Yeah, I agree, Bobby. And I actually think one of the biggest pulls toward Marcus is the fact that he's probably, without stereotyping, quite an unlikely person to pick up at his time of life, this whole new journey of meditation, from some of the things he spoke about in his past and the jobs that he'd had. You know, a young guy from Manchester, bit of football in his past, you know, worked in a call centre, cash, you know, all the things that he was interested in, to then take this U-turn and be so authentic with it and really open to learning, I think is so interesting, and I love that about him.
Yeah, absolutely, because particularly something like meditation, the understanding of how it can benefit our mental health is still developing, and so it really helps to have someone that's relatable and down to earth. We can sort of have this idea in our head that meditation is like a guru that lives on a mountain.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, really kind of vague idea that's almost like a fairy tale, because that's not reality for most people that meditate. And Marcus is an example of someone that's a relatable, normal person.
Absolutely, yeah.
That has just found this great tool for benefiting his mental health. And we did have a look into the growing body of research behind this as well. So first off, from Mental Health America, they did a meta-analysis and found that meditation, in its many variations, has long been acknowledged as a tool to master the mind and cope with stress. Scientific research is also increasingly validating those claims, especially for depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, PTSD, and ADHD. In their research, over 600 studies on meditation indicated the positive effects of this stress-reducing technique. So I thought that was a really nice way of kind of summing up the link meditation and mental health.
Absolutely.
Also, we wanted to have a quick look at prevalence, because this is growing and becoming so much more popular. So according to MindWorks, a non-profit health organisation, they estimate that between 200 and 500 million people meditate globally. Also, from the National Centre for Complementary and Integrative Health, they found that the number of adults who meditated in the US was 18 million in 2012 and represents about 8% of the entire population. So I found that really positive, just to hear how many people are already using this. And they've also referenced that that is growing year on year as well.
I know. There's no denying that it's just become absolutely massive over the last few years. Although people have been meditating around the world for thousands of, you know, from when it all began in different forms. Although maybe meditation as a tool isn't something that I do, I recognise the benefits for so many other people. But where it crosses over is the fact that it's all about thought in the moment. It's all about being in the moment. And more people in the world can recognise the power of the moment, the present, and the gift of what the present is. It just takes you into a completely different place, absolutely reduces stress, and you just move through life. Just understanding that is huge. So I'm not surprised that it's going to be the biggest thing ever.
Because in its simplest sense, people often refer to depression being about the past and worrying about the things that didn't happen and the things you could have done, and anxiety more being focused on the future and all the things that might happen.
Yeah.
And in that way, it's a really good antidote to that kind of thinking. When you reduce down your focus of control, actually what's happening to you right now, there isn't any imminent danger for most people. We're in the lucky position in this country where most of us, the vast majority, have a roof over our head, have clean water, have food to eat. And so we're already in a relatively comfortable place compared to so many people in other parts of the world. But with the stress of the modern world, it can feel like there's imminent peril, but so often that is, you know, upcoming worries or past worries.
Yeah, and all we've got is right now, literally all we've got. So deep when you really get into it, that's all we've got. And that's what meditation, I think, as a tool, allows people to develop within themselves, that moment, that now, to feel that moment. But actually, we've all got that all the time.
Yeah, but these tools are so relevant because they're actually so straightforward. The things you learn through meditation, it's actually the practice of them is where the benefit is. The simple basis of meditation is actually fairly straightforward, but it's how you can find application in so many parts of your life. That's where the true changes come.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, whether or not, yeah, it makes sense. But meditation as a tool is fantastic because it helps people put some kind of understanding to what they could do or to find that place. But I reckon as you become more and more developed, you start to probably recognize the ability to get in that moment at any point of the day, wherever you are. You don't necessarily need 15 minutes or half an hour or any time alone in a dark room, which a lot of people often say. You could get into that place at any moment in your life, wherever you are, on the top of a mountain or in the most stressful situation at work or with kids screaming at you or whatever, because it's an understanding of how your mind works more than a practice, from my point of view. But a bit of both is probably where the magic happens.
I know what you mean, that it can be a technique of checking in with yourself.
Yeah.
That you don't have to use every part of meditation to find it useful in every situation.
Exactly. Well done, Bobby. You said it in the perfect way. That's what it is, yeah. 100%.
And then the last thing I wanted to read a little bit from was an article from self.com, which is called Here's Why Meditation is So Amazing for Your Mental Health. I'll link the full article, but I'm just going to read the start of it and a little bit from later on. There's no denying that meditation has officially gone mainstream. Gone are the days where people turned their noses up and wrote it off as a hippie practice. Now there are posh meditation studios in New York City and a handful of smartphone apps to help us find calm anytime, anywhere. Taking a few minutes to meditate every day with the goal of becoming more mindful or focused on accepting the present is a great way to relieve stress. But it's even more powerful than you think. Meditation helps ease mental health conditions like depression and anxiety, so much so that an increasing number of clinicians are trying it as a course of treatment before turning to medication. So I found that really interesting, and certainly from people I know working in the NHS in this country, they are actively recommending it more and more, and their patients are more and more open to it as well. And then the last thing, which we do touch on a bit in the interview, is that you can start with just a small bit of practice, that it doesn't have to be a big commitment. So later in the article, they say, for the best results, meditate every day, first thing in the morning. But you can start with just 5 minutes. Research has yet to pinpoint the magic time requirement to see these brain changes and improve mental health outcomes. But Elizabeth Ward, PhD, a clinical psychologist and mindfulness researcher, says that ideally you should try and do it every day for at least 10 to 12 minutes. 4 to 5 times per week is great too, if you really can't manage 7. The key is to be consistent. And I think that was very much echoed in the interview with Marcus as well. So that is everything we had to mention for now. Anything else you wanted to say?
No, just look forward to listening to the interview. It's a great interview, he's a great guy.
Yeah, and I'm always delighted to get people on from their personal life.
I know. And
just kind of share what continues to inspire me with the people that are already around me.
Yeah, that's great.
So it was really nice. I think it's a really fascinating interview, and he brings meditation, something that can seem quite an abstract concept, really down to earth in a relatable, realistic way.
Let's get him back on in a few months when he's doing his journey for the next few months and see how he's getting on. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we'll see. So yeah, let us know what you think of the interview, listeners, and we might do that. So for now, we'll get into the interview with Marcus Farry, but first...
Who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Hi, I'm Marcus. Hope you're all well. So I'd say at first, when I was 18, I'd say, after a couple of different jobs, working in, you know, pound bakery and shelf stacking and serving pies at the local football club, that was all right. It was until I got into a full-time role is where it actually started to slowly creep in. And it was more, I was in this call centre role, and obviously with the training, the vigorous teachings that they would do, they would say, well, if you're not hitting your targets, we're going to sack you. Because it was target-based work. And I thought, well, I kind of like this job, and there's money to make. So, you know, you get your basic wage at the end of the month, but that wasn't enough because there was loads of commission to be made. So, you know, you get into work for about 8 o'clock, and then some days you'd be working until 8 o'clock the same evening just to hit target. And then you've obviously got a lot to do throughout the day. So you'd have lunch and come back. Mm-hmm. Then you'd be having like a cup of coffee and things to keep you motivated. And you'd be sat on the phone literally from 8 till 8 with a bit of a break in between. And then it was like, yeah, it was crazy. Like, so how I was doing it, I was good. In fact, I was very, very good. After my first 2-3 weeks in, I was leveling their top salesman. Not only was making commission on the deals, it was like you got commission bonuses if you hit a certain structure. So their top salesman would probably do around, you know, on top of his £1,000 salary, he'd probably get 2-3 grand in that month. And because I was a young, eager kind of, I want it all, suit, tie, polished, and looking immaculate. You know, they're going Saturdays to hit the target and the bonus. And then I think it was after my like my fifth month, after touching second place, which didn't really exist to me, because if you're not first, then you're nothing, the last. And that was the mindset that was being installed. So it was like, well, you know, you finished second, so it was all right, but it wasn't first. It wasn't the best it could be.
And do you feel that was something you had going into it, or that was the work?
That was like a work structure. It was like, you know, I knew I had to meet target, but through the, you know, the sales managers are always going to be hard, and you have to get the results, and because they want their commission as well. Mm-hmm. It was more like I had to do it. It was like I can't finish second. I have to be first, because like I don't want to be last, because last is second place, right? Mm-hmm. And I was installed, and I think a month before I was like £100, let's say, off being the best. On target, I think it was like 3-4 would have been my paycheck. So I didn't make my bonus, so I only got 3. So you're 18 years old, making more money than you can do with what you're working all the time. So throughout the week, you're like, you don't get a respite. So you're going out on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, drinking loads of alcohol, you're buying friends all drinks, you're being Rockefeller. And it's great, but you're absolutely, you know, you're busting your nut throughout the entire week just so you can party. And then wake up, hangover, go back in work Monday. It's like, it didn't make sense. It genuinely didn't make sense. So on the month 5, I was around 7 o'clock at night, and I was one deal away from winning the top place. Mm-hmm. I think what happened was the call dropped, and like the line went dropped, so either the customer hung up or there was some a fault with the machine. So then I tried to ringing it back, and I was so stressed. And I wanted to win it so much, and then it stopped. I remember waking up on the floor, clutching my chest, and I had like a mini heart attack, little implosion. So I rushed to hospital, and it was like heart palpitation work. And I thought, because you're so stressed out, I thought, how could that happen to me? I'm indestructible, was the mindset I was installed with. So then after, you know, being wired up, I went to Manchester Royal. I had an irregular heartbeat pattern from it, and all these things came up, and I was like, I just wanted to work hard, that's all I wanted to do, to please other people. So then I tried getting back into work 6 to 8 months later, and I was just like hitting this brick wall. So I got out of the hospital, and then my dad would rush me to the Lake Street, because great air, it's pure, it's then grounding for you, and it's more of a connection with nature. And then was there for a couple of weeks, and then came back. And
your dad sounds quite sort of straightforward in that way when you talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's going to be a point where it's just going to go, that's it. Like a snap or a break. That happened to me, and I was like, wow, I'm 18, want to work, what car? scared of working. How do you get back into work? What do I need to deal with? So I saw a couple of counsellors and like, well, this has been my mindset. What do you think? And they were like, do you have to be the best? I was like, yeah. And that was it. So it took me about 6 months seeing this counsellor just to say, you need to reprogram yourself, ground yourself. And then that was it. And then my dad offered me a job selling double glazing. He's like, I don't need to work absolutely really hard. I want to do 2 or 3 appointments a day and come home and chill out. And then slowly, from surely, from 19 to 26, no, 27, that's what I did. And I built myself up slowly, taking my time.
And so at that point, were you aware of how the stress was affecting your mental health, or were you more focused on the sort of practical side of getting back into work?
I think it really affected the mental health side of it because I was scared. Like, I was scared to work, but this is going to happen again. And then all these thoughts start to come up, like you've never experienced, like the anxiety and the fear mm-hmm. of loss, I mean, fear of providing for yourself. And then it's like, wow.
And it sounds like that workplace set such a high standard mm-hmm. that you were actually earning way more than you needed. Yeah. But because of the pressurized environment, they'd yeah. convinced you that it was that or bust.
Yeah, that was it. And that was the mental challenge to get over. So it's like, and then the worst part was, it's like finding a job that's, you could say, a normal 9 to 5, where you're not earning that kind of money. Mm-hmm. And then you're thinking you're not doing as well for yourself. That was hard to do.
Right.
So I tried a few jobs before I got into work, like, you know, family company and stuff. So I was like, it's not enough. And then again, you're coming home thinking you're worthless. You've not done your best, even though it's a set rate. So it was a challenge, you could say, yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds like you were really fixed with that. So then did you find when you were speaking to counsellors, you just couldn't get out of that mindset?
It taught me a lot. It taught me a lot to just, like, breathe.
Right.
Just take a step back. You really need to take a step back. And I thought, well, if I take a step back, then I'm not going to take a step forward. So again, it was a counteracting to the rate being installed. So it was like, sugar.
And so you were going to tell me about then how meditation came along for you.
Yeah, so, you know, I met a partner and she was a yoga instructor. And yoga's all right. I don't mind yoga and stretch and breathe. But what really resonated with me was the last part of the yoga session. It's called Savasana, which is corpse pose. So what is it? You lie down. Face your palms upwards, you relax your shoulders, relax your neck, relax your body, and just have your feet just slightly apart for 10 minutes. And you just breathe. Just breathe in through your nose and out through your nose, and you just come back to yourself. And this is like nearly 2 and a bit years ago now, so, oh, she's alright, I better mean this. Lying there, doing nothing, just breathing. I thought, there's something about this. Really, something that resonates with me that. Going on my journey through what I've been through, I thought, this is beautiful. So I was going into my double glazing appointment. Before I walked into the house, I just breathe. Just inhale, exhale, relaxing the jaw, relaxing the shoulders, dropping the tongue from the roof of the mouth. You just done it, you feel good,
I just did it as well.
It feels good, it feels beautiful. So you come back to yourself, and you think, you know what, let's go and try and sell these windows. And I thought, there's more to this. So, you know,
And also, it's so opposite to what you'd been used to. Because particularly in a call centre environment,
yeah.
There's such pressure that every minute you need to be getting onto your next call. And what are you doing? Like, you need to be writing your notes up while you're on the call. It's so yeah. productivity driven.
Yeah.
So for you to then be in a different environment, which is still sales-based,
mm.
but actually you're going into people's homes, you're having a chat with yeah. them, you're having a brew. Like, it's just yeah. the complete opposite almost.
Yeah, like... And then just basically your honesty. And my sales a bit. Why? Because I was more relaxed. There wasn't any pressure. The job just felt easier. It's like the traffic, there's no stress during the traffic. Because obviously with spot meditation, I take an inhale and exhale. I can't change the car in front. I can't make it go any faster. Sort of return to the present moment. And be you. Smile. Enjoy the moment you're in. And then you release, then you can just go to your appointment and they'll be like, tell me that, I apologise for being late. I couldn't change the traffic. However, and you just open it up and go back in again. And you're smiling and you're just being you. But yeah, it's, I think it's beautiful. It really is. And usually it resonates with the people that say, oh, I don't need that. Give them 5 minutes. And because they're so tense and so stressed. So you don't like letting go of this character that they've become. And that's what I had to let go of when I was 18. this character, this figure of what I thought was greatness. This suit, tie, nice car, ego. It's a hard image to maintain that, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Mm.
Like,
and it sounds like you'd also built up this mentality that you're a strong guy and nothing can touch you and that's it.
It was all fabricated.
Yeah.
It was literally all fabricated. I imagine having a mortgage, expensive outgoings, yeah? And then all of a sudden, pop, something happens, you can't change it. You've got this lifestyle that you're not ready for. Imagine that. So noticing the earlier signs would be so much more beautiful to teach, so people can help themselves to think, oh, well, I do need a weekend off, or I do need a couple of days off, or I do need to, you know, speak to someone, I do need to take an avenue where I can see a counsellor throughout the week, just so we can deal with the baggage I've taken on.
Right.
So that avenue as well.
Yeah, because it's pretty incompatible with stress then, because if you're working as much as you were and you're really stressed out, the only way really to cope with that and sustain it is to push those things down.
Yeah.
Because if you were into meditation at that point, you'd be more aware of the issues, and then if you're aware of them, you have to do something about them.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, as survival, they just ignore what's going on for them.
Yeah, they build walls and lots of walls. Like, self-care, though, I mean, you've got to look after yourself. There's only one of you that can do what you do, and that's it. And if you can't do what you do, then you need to take a step back. And a lot of things to yourself, how can I make this better? How can I step back, pause, and reassess what we've got in front of ourselves? All right, okay, so talking about it, opening it up a little bit, having a breath, having your time, hashtag me time, you know?
Yeah, and I think particularly men are encouraged to do that, to create this kind of compartmentalization in our lives, that with man-up culture, we don't think we can talk about our emotions at work. And we've got to save that all for home, and then we can't talk about work at home because it'll stress our families out, and it creates all these divides. And then you're never really being your honest self in any situation.
And it's like, when you do open up, you don't know when to open up, so you again keep it bottled. It's like, it's not fair, is it? You know, it's not fair on yourself.
And so another thing I wanted to talk about is how we met, because we both met through doing modelling work.
Absolutely.
And so how did you get into that?
Again, my ego wanted to be, it was more ego driven. I want to be in the public eye. I want people to know I'm doing well, even though I might fabricate the point that I'm not. You have to like paint this perfect life of social media and I'm doing this now. It's like, so again, the ego came back up again a little bit, the early 20s. And I was like, went really vain. And
yeah, you have to really project a certain level of confidence. And around the time that we were modelling together, I was involved more in training at my agency, and so a lot of the people that would come in and I would help train were coming in lacking confidence massively.
Yeah.
So many of them were coming in thinking, if I do modelling, then I'll be confident.
Yeah, okay.
And all that teaches you is to create this persona, this fake confidence, and then you go in, and if you don't book the job, then it confirms to you you're not good enough. And if you do book the job, you think, I fooled them.
Yeah.
They believe the confidence.
Yeah, literally. So
in a way, I felt like I had a kind of advantage going into it, in that I'd worked really hard on body confidence. I was still struggling with my eating disorder, but I didn't. That was more so at that point to do with the kind of the control of myself and my life, when I didn't always feel in control, as opposed to despising my body. Yes, I didn't always see my body accurately, but I didn't fundamentally hate it. I've worked really hard to overcome that.
But then again, you look in the mirror and thinking, have I done enough? Have I proved my point to where I can get a job? And then you're reassessing it and going backwards again. It's like you could forever judging yourself for, like, do I fit this perfect image yet? Am I enough? Well, everyone is enough for themselves, you know. Like, just as soon as you tell yourself you're enough, the pressure drops. But when it comes down to eating, it's like you've got to fit a certain bill, and it's like, it's the industry, it's what they want, and if you don't match it, then you meet their requirements, you go away not only feeling like rubbish, but then what happens after that, you know?
Yeah, and that's one thing that I always stress to new models coming into the industry that the natural inclination is to put this all on yourself. Mm. Every time you don't get a job, you question what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
And actually, so often it's a case that the model that got it, they've worked with before.
Yeah.
Or recommendation. They look really perfect for that kind of brand aesthetic.
They fit the bill for that job.
I don't tend to get certain types of jobs because I don't really fit the branding on it. Exactly. Instead, I'm quite happy to pitch myself as the kind of quirkier jobs.
Yeah, because you're building your own unique brand yourself. Yeah. That's it. So, yeah, I completely agree. Like, whole eating disorder came, well, I know a little bit about it. I just had to have this balanced diet. So, well, when you're shooting from, I don't know, early doors, hair and makeup, what, six onwards, and then you've got to not bloat yourself out, so you can't really eat much. So, you're like, when you're on set, from, let's say, what, 8 till finish at 3, and then you can eat, it's like your body turns into survival mode because you're not eating or had anything, and then you're turning this whole mental health thing against yourself because I'm not eating. So, oh, but I want to fit this image. So it's all right. So then you push the eating down again because you got to still for the bill because you might convince yourself you're too big for the shoot or whatever it comes down to. And there's people out there now thinking that mentality, only doing themselves harm when you have to look after themselves first, you know, so.
It is really tough. And I can be quite defensive of the modelling industry, partly because I'm still in it, because a lot of people like to blame the agencies, like that's the only place to place the blame. Yeah. And actually, so much of it is the market and the consumers, because,
yeah,
you know, I'm lucky to be represented by an agency where there is a diverse group of body types,
yeah,
nationalities, hair types, all sorts. But there are a lot of the customers, whether they're the clients or whether it's the end consumers, yeah, that have been taught this, yeah, narrow idea of beauty.
And that's it. It's not fair that culture that's been installed in the modern industry, because there's all the young people going in expecting one thing, and it's not fair for like what we used to do. Like, so it's like, yeah.
Yeah, well, one example that's always baffled me, I won't mention any names, but a friend of mine was booked for a job with L'Oreal, and I think at the time she'd maybe just turned 17.
Yeah.
And it was a new product that L'Oreal had launched, Root Touch Up,
yeah,
serum. And so for the job, they dyed her roots grey,
yeah,
and then filmed a bit and then applied the product to make her hair blonde again. And she's pretty sure she was 17 at the time. So all the people watching the L'Oreal ad are seeing this young girl who no way is going to really have grey hair. They're being taught then, if I buy this product, I'll look like her. It's completely, yeah, unrealistic. And the clients know how young she is.
Yeah.
They know that she doesn't represent their customers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they know that they'll make sales by using such a young model.
Mm.
And it's really tricky because I also don't want my friend not to get work.
Yeah, true.
But it's so difficult to balance these issues.
Mm-hmm. I can agree. I agree.
And so how did you sort of come to terms with that ultimately? Because you ended up moving away from modelling.
You know, I found a partner and then moved on with that, really. Would I go back? Yeah, I'd go back into modelling. You know, Manchester got a great reputation for it. Why not? I've got loads of friends in there.
I don't think I've mentioned this to you before, but I felt like at the time when you got into that relationship, it was something that felt really ideal for you. Yeah. And so it sort of maybe filled something that modelling was filling, that you had the comfort of a partner,
yeah,
who, true, really admired you, so you maybe didn't need the validation of modelling as much.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, yeah. That's a very good point.
That was my perception, because obviously I miss working with you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Travelling, and then didn't have time for the industry anymore. I use my weekends and midweeks to do other things, so.
Yeah, you certainly keep yourself pretty busy.
Yeah, I agree.
And looking back at your work history, it makes a lot of sense that you like to be so busy.
Well, yeah, I mean, busy enough that you're not stressing out and, like, just consistent. Okay, consistency is key.
Well, I guess that's the journey. It's learning what level is actually healthy for you.
Exactly. It's not going too hard. It's not going too soft. It's finding that balance that's right for you and right for everyone, really, because find what you're happy with so you're not overdoing it, or not underdoing it as well.
I like that word speed, because that really reminds me of a lot of the teaching of meditation about slowing down.
Absolutely.
And do you mind sharing a bit more about where meditation
absolutely.
Came
from? So I was with a partner, and then I mentioned about Savasana and doing nothing for 10 minutes, going into different appointments where, you know, I was in control of me, situation, and my sales increased. Naturally, though, because when you listen and read people, not only are you more like an empath, like a lot more empathy shows, but you come across as natural as well. Like, you understand, like, what's going on. There was no pressure. There was understanding, and that was it, of what they could do. And that's it.
I just want to mention one thing there, because I think that's a great way to describe it. I think we can all relate to that experience where you have a day where you don't even feel within your body.
Mm.
The whole day is just kind of passed you by. You're thinking of a million different things you're distracted by, and then it's bedtime. And in many ways, that's kind of the opposite to meditation, where you're not really present at all.
Yeah. Well, I have like one day a week, maybe like that. I mean, you think to yourself, wow, I've not slowed down. I've not even had my time for just to process any of this information. It's like, okay, so then you take your pause, you take a breath, and you slow down and think, okay, that's how it happened. And then you slowly start to digest the day. But you should get it. If everyone can find 5 to 10 minutes throughout the day for themselves, then just to breathe, to let go of all the thoughts, focus on one thing, one object. And that's meditation, from my understanding, where you focus on one thing and try and be, excuse me, mindful of the now. And you train yourself to, like, not get distracted by all these different things and wear yourself out. Because if the brain's doing more than one thing, you're thinking of one task, two tasks, three tasks, four tasks, you'll find that all these tasks merge into one and don't become as efficient anymore. Complete it and then move on to the next one. And then the next one. I mean, that's the art I've learned, really, because it's benefited my life so much. Even in a working environment, we get thousands of emails a day. We have to, again, demand of meeting the call center requirements. Imagine if people in the call center were still looking at the targets, but taking a step back and just taking a breath before each call and then going into it and then relaxing and then slowly working their way through and then building that process within yourself.
Right, because otherwise you're not getting the distance. And I've certainly found that in more stressful jobs that I've had. You come off the work floor, you go to the staff room, and you all just rant about work for half an hour.
Yeah.
And you're not actually having a break. If anything, you might be more riled up by the time you go back on.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. The way I explain it to people, if they really don't get meditation, they just can't relate to it. I describe it like if you go for a massage, that I personally think about half of the benefit of that is just being in a dark, quiet room and having nothing to do.
Yeah.
That obviously there's such benefits physically, but I think just in terms of your mind, there's so much benefit of just being there and being quiet, because naturally things will pop into your mind. You're not just going to have a clear mind. Yeah, that's why I use the example of a massage, because you can't do anything about it. You're literally
half
undressed. You're not going anywhere. You've got this relaxing music. So things might come into your mind that stress you out, but you can't fix them. And you know that you've paid to relax, so you're more likely to do so.
And the art of massage is getting unlocking the tension within the muscles. Mm. So then you're fully mind and body's being switched off from a physical point of view. But that can be done through the mental point of view as well, by just breathing and just really coming down. Like, I've had some fantastic one-to-one clients of where most of business clients, managing directors, right, they just like need to start a day of meditation. So driven to their house, set up, like, what do we need to expect? I said, nothing, just breathe. So when you're going through the meditation, like, they're racing in their own mind trying to get to the end product. I want to come to stop. Slowly put one foot in front of another. Take a breath at a time. Focus on the second breath, then the third. Don't go focus on your 100th breath or the 200th breath, because you're just doing it in a step-by-step process. So what I learned from that was, like, it's still unnoticed in the workplace. And imagine if their employees understood the process, taking a break. Not only would the business really benefit from it, but the employees, the employees' family, it would be like a positive, like, spread of just taking a break, but slowly, mindfully going through it.
Well, that's it, yeah. Particularly in a close environment like a workplace. Stress or relaxation is contagious. If your boss comes in stressed, and the team are going to feel it.
Yeah. Even though they think, oh, they'll be all right. It's not. They've just seen me walk through with all right.
Huffing and puffing.
Yeah, because he couldn't get his car space. But someone cut in front of him or something silly. Well, then his contagious aura, for example, his aura of negative energy just bounced across the classroom or the workout space or the work office. And it's like,
right, because then by holding on to that, you're allowing it to colour the further experiences. If an employee then comes up to you and says, oh, I know it's last minute, but any chance I could get tomorrow off? I've got a hospital appointment.
No, you can't. You're supposed to be at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's like, oh, just play it. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, I mean, the steps, there's process, something like a process in place, like a management process, you could say, of like how to approach work or how to do this, or there's got to be something that's going to benefit the business. So there's got to be an angle of stress resilience, noticing these signs. And it's an area that needs touching upon, really.
Yeah, because it's almost like a sort of mental palate refresh, in the same way you might have a glass of water between things if you're a food taster. You know, we've all got to have a certain amount of separation, whether it's work, whether it's family. You've had an argument with somebody and then you're going to meet up with a different friend. You don't want to then have an argument with them.
Yeah, you're carrying the baggage. Just let go of the bag.
It makes such a difference. And whenever I read up on meditation, so often it's recommended that you have this regular practice.
Yeah.
In the mornings.
Yeah.
Because A, you're getting that regular approach. It goes from being a thing you do to, with practice, way you approach life.
I couldn't agree more with you. Like, I did 10, 15 minutes every morning, and some days I missed it because of it. Life happens, and when you miss it, you're like, you notice, like, oh my goodness, like, I didn't do the meditation, but again, you've got to step back from that and not let it have a knock on effect throughout the day. And then, like, you'll go on at the evening, I'll do about an hour, and just, you know, come back to me and just relax my body, because it's like, it's you need you, again, to do what you do. Like, you need to come back to yourself. The practice is essential.
I think that is really true, the idea of treating it like a skill. And the second thing I was going to mention about having a regular practice in the morning, I think it's a really great way to start your day.
Yeah.
Because then you've already got one thing ticked off.
Exactly, like making your bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. Making your bed, going downstairs, have your meditation, and then start your day. Best before food. I always find best before food because it's like, before your day actually starts, you've made your bed, you've gone downstairs, you sit down on the rug, the couch, or just a comfortable seated position for yourself. I mean, keep the spine straight. Take a big, deep inhale through your nose and out through your mouth. And then just do it for like an hour, 3 to 5 of them. And then return to nasal breathing, so in through your nose, expanding the stomach, and then release. And just do that. In and out. It's the only two things you need to focus on. Your in-breath and your out-breath. And it's as basic as that. And from that, you can Google more development for yourself. You can then begin your meditation journey.
Yeah, because there are different approaches. The main experience I've had of it is using the Headspace app.
I recommend that as well.
Well, with that, they do it really tailored. So I've
more westernized.
Yeah, so it's guided meditation. So a guide speaks to you through your headphones.
Absolutely.
And talks you through what each step is. And really gives you things to focus on. So focusing on the breath. Some people can just do that automatically. Yeah. Some people, like myself, need a bit more instruction. Like focus on you know, the way your body moves when you're breathing out.
Yeah, touching the core.
Yeah, maybe imagine how the air is going in, inflating the lungs and then deflating them. Sometimes you need something quite specific to focus on.
That one thing.
Exactly. But then from there, they also do courses. I've done one on depression, I think they have one on anxiety, they have one on sleep, and they're just different approaches and techniques that move your focus to where it's relevant for.
And it's so adaptable for you. Like, there's so many different meditations out there in the app that you can just, well, one might not resonate with you, but the other one will. And again, same base online, so it's like there is something out there for everyone. So I try and change my practice when I teach just to adapt to different people, and I'll get the feedback. What do you think about? It's all about finding what works for you.
Absolutely. And I love what you mentioned about the approach to it and how you sit, because I think a lot of people can have this in their mind that you've got to sit like cross-legged on the floor.
Lowers, full lowers. No, not really.
And actually, the most important thing is posture. That as long as you're comfortable and you're not going to make your back ache from sitting in that way for a while.
So I quite lie down.
Lie down to do it, which you're not meant to do because you can just fall asleep. You can get too relaxed.
Some people just need to sleep.
Right, because that's one of the funny things about it. Because actually, if you fall asleep, it's kind of a sign that it's working. Like you're getting relaxed enough. But at the same time, that's not very practical if you're doing this to try and start your day.
Exactly.
But it all depends on you, and that's why it's important to try it out. You know, that you can start with just 5 minutes a day.
Yeah.
You know, if you're me and you want to lie down, try lying down over the covers, and then your brain isn't going to think, okay, it's sleep time. Keep the lights on, do what you need to do.
So, yeah, moving on, I taught at Bolting Environmental Services, Rochdale, for World Mental Health Day. And so he was my friend's dad. And basically, he said, yeah, come in and teach us all. What we'll do is we'll all sit down. And he created this space. And there was about 15 to 20, you know, directors, managers. And it was beautiful. You know, the 5 minute, 15 minute slideshow on meditation. So he couldn't understand what it was about, because people have never heard of it before, not really understanding what the key method is. So I did half an hour mindfulness, and then followed by a half an hour of a guided meditation. So we were just breathing and relaxing through, and then they came out after that half an hour. The feedback was absolutely fantastic. Like, you could tell everyone was more relaxed. All 20 of them in the room were just like, the feedback was like, never experienced that before. I can see why businesses need it. Steve Marsh, the managing director, invited me in. It was just really strong as well, because when you're teaching people who've never done it before, they don't know what to expect. I said, don't expect anything. Just expect to come out of it relaxed and more understanding about yourself and what you need to do. And the feedback after that working day was, yeah, everyone found that they could handle work a lot better. And I was like, I mean, they're a big company, the Bolton Environmental Services, and just making that one small impact of a mental health day, I walked out of it feeling I've done my bit as a person to help.
Right, and that's just from the first time most of those people will have tried it ever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it is fascinating. One thing that it may just be me, but when I started trying meditation, I found it really fascinating with that focus on the breath, how irregular your breath is.
Yeah.
I think, like many people, I just assume that it's like almost mechanical, like in out, but actually your breath's constantly correct. It's almost like oversteering on a car.
Yeah.
You're constantly trying to get the right amount of air, and so you take a big breath, and then the next one's a bit smaller.
Yeah.
And then the next one's a bit smaller, then you need a bigger one again. It's like constant correction.
Yeah.
And it's only by trying this out that I even realised that. And yet, breathing is something we do constantly.
Oh, 23,000 times a day.
And I didn't even know what my own breath sounded like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that might just be me, but I find that fascinating. So just the last thing I should ask you about is, how have you found meditation and going into teaching it has benefited your mental health now?
I feel like I enjoy life more, personally, because then I'm doing my bit as a person to help. There's no pressure. Obviously, I don't really feel pressure anymore. It's something I want to do. You're excited about it. And then obviously when you turn that excitement into a passion, it doesn't really feel like a job. It's something you're doing and developing. So it's like, I love teaching. I completely love it. Like, class tomorrow night. So I just want to help. You focus on something you love. Like, with double glazing, for example, going backwards a step. I like securing people's homes, but now I'm securing them as a person. You know what I mean?
I love that. You're helping them to be more resilient. Exactly. And in a way, I think meditation, when you do it regularly enough, can help you live more honestly. Because when you're taking the time habitually to pay attention to the thoughts that come and go, if every time you sit down to it, you're dreading going to work, then it's maybe a sign you need to be leaving work, and you're ignoring the fact that it's time to get a new job.
Your body will give you signs, and it does send you messages. whether you're open to listening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, by prioritizing, paying that attention, making that time for yourself,
yeah,
it's harder to ignore it.
Absolutely. I think it spells out much of a clearer diagnosis of what's going on the inside to actually read you as you, to say, all right, yeah, it's not working in that direction. However, what can we do? Step back, assess, change, pause, move on to a new direction, or change the current one that you're on by speaking to members in work or family members to get rid of the elephant in the room, to open that situation up and say, look, I weren't happy with this. However, and you just train yourself to be more of a stronger, more confident individual who's also a team player, and you can manage you better, therefore you can manage others. I don't know, that's what I feel.
Absolutely. I think that's so true. And one last thing I'd like to mention, which I talk about quite a lot on the podcast, is how as much as we get support with our mental health, and there is great support options out there, ultimately no one is going to have the constant check-in of how our mental health is other than us. You know, no GP is going to know how we are day to day as well as we do.
Because it fluctuates, if that's the right word.
Yeah, constantly.
Up, down.
And with an approach like meditation, you can become even more attuned to that constant checking in. So you can predict the symptoms coming sooner. You can take action of additional self-care, or do I need to go back
checking
to the
with yourself.
GP?
Forget Facebook. Check in with you first. Don't check into coffee shops. Check in with yourself.
Yeah. What a place to finish. All right. We'll wrap up there then. If people want to find you online, where should they go?
Meditate with Marcus. It's on Facebook page. It's on your Facebook page for now, and it will be slowly growing in a better direction soon. I do have a website called Medicalm, which is medicalm.org.uk.
Grand. So we'll finish up there then, and I'll include a link to your website in the episode description.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.